Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games, of an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for the talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. Search for call ID 17702. Or Starfleet Universe On Call, or SFU On Call, you'll find me there. And of course, if you want the most interesting and best online experience, you want to go to twitch.tv, yes, twitch.tv/SFU On Call, and you will find us there. And of course, if you need to contact me for in or use my email address is SFUOnCall at gmail.com. It's SFUONCALL at gmail.com. Also, you want to follow me on Twitter? Feel free. Or is it X this week or some other? Don't know what's named this week, but whatever it's called, I'm sure you know it. I don't know it at the moment. And it's going to be SFUOnCall. And of course, the personal accounts is Paul Franz and my business account, Franz Games, which will let you know what's going on with SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds on the net, including YouTube. And of course, quick news from ADB. This week, Steve Patrick is still working hard on the Orion Master Starship book. Also released this past week, past 6 days, because that's how long the post was. It was 6 days ago. So they announced it on Friday, and right after the podcast. Hey, and that is Federation Commander's Learn Ship Card Number 3 pack number 3. Sorry, and that's available in multiple sources. You know, the normal e-tailers, you know, Wargame Vault, Warehouse 23, and Drive Through RPG. Okay, I couldn't quite remember the last one. And it has a dozen of the Lyran ships from Federation Commander. That is the Cave Line battleship. You have the Forest Lion Heavy Dreadnought. You have the Lion Dreadnought, the Desert Lion Light Dreadnought, the Light Tactical Transport, the King Jaguar, which is the new heavy cruiser, the Imperial Jaguar, which is the new command cruiser, the Jaguar L, which is the war cruiser leader, the Jaguar E, which is the escort cruiser, the military police escort, which is brand new, the Alicat L, war destroyer leader, and the Alicat E, which is the war destroyer escort. So definitely grab that from your local e-tailer that you enjoy. And of course, this week found in the online store is the Galactic Conquest Rulebook. It's only $19.95. This newly fifth edition of the most famous campaign rules in the Starfleet universe uses these rules in the official campaigns or build your own campaign. Includes everything: conquest, exploration, lances, diplomacy, construction, technical development, ships, bases, and a thousand more things. So feel free to go pick up your copy of Galactic Conquest Rulebook. Actually, never mind. We got to check to see what version I've got. I'm not sure if I got the 5th edition or the 4th edition. It's been a while since I bought mine. Moving on forward, we have the SFB Online tournament. That is the Sapphire Star 15 tournament, which is got... We should have a first finalist, which is Peter Bikia. Jeff Clark and his opponent are currently going at it to see who will go on to the finals. I forget whose opponent Jeff Clark's opponent is, and I should have looked that up. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the library report, there's not much to announce there because there's no progress. there's no differences. Doesn't mean no progress. There's no differences, which actually I should have gotten around to by now. I forgive you. Forgive me, Frank, for not putting the updates to the library there. And when it comes to FedCom, still nothing to report for that. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the only old Paul Friends, welcoming you to Star for the Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug. Good evening. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing good. How about you, Jeff?
Oh, I'm doing just fine this evening.
Excellent, excellent. And last and certainly not least, Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Hello. Happy being back all that day, everybody.
Whoops. Okay. Sorry. I had to fix Twitch on my iPad so that you guys couldn't hear it. Oh boy. Hold on. Give me a sec here. Da-da-da. And yes. Do do. And okay, I think that's better. The video looked really, really, really awful. I was kind of blurry. It's like, okay. I know one way to fix it. It to the audience, it's annoying, I'm sure, because I have to basically put my hand in front of the camera so it will refocus. Because it's autofocus, which is fine. But I'm not going to complain about that because I can't imagine me actually spending the time each and every time I set up my podcast setup that I have to manually focus the camera to be the proper distance and so forth. So I'll deal with some minor issues. But anyhow, the one topic actually I was thinking about for tonight is actually brought up by a YouTuber. I was gonna say fan, follower, yeah. Lord knows, patience zero. Always seems not always, but gives me probably the most feedback of anyone on YouTube when it comes to the videos I post. Usually, it's about ADB. And how they should sell the company and all that kind of thing, but that's neither here nor there, because at the moment ADB hasn't sold the company. So the important thing is, will someone actually buy the company? And all of that. Obviously, I think everyone here would like that. I think if it meant what we want, which is of course that there'd be more money invested in S&P, the marketing would be ramped up, the development of the product would increase. Now this is always to me the most difficult things of anything when it comes to that, meaning that the whole issue of when you have a product, I'm thinking this is, let's say, a book, because it when it comes to game design, a book is a pretty good analogy for a game, which is you got in the case of a book, you got a set of background material, you got a set of characters and so forth that are already in the universe. And in some cases, the author in his own mind has ideas about where plot lines are going to go and so forth. I'm thinking of, Herbert, wrote the Dune series that he did not complete the last Dune book of his, or that the next Dune book was written by his son. forget which.
He wrote several.
Oh, I know he wrote, you know, Chapter House, Dune, Messiah, Dune Messiah. There's another one. I can't remember. God Emperor. Thank you. Because I read every single of those novels all the way up to Chapter House Dune. And then there was one that came after that. And I did not read that one, but I think that was written by his son. But the point here being that in the case of that possibility, or possibly inevitability, you know, let's say that, you know, if Steve Cole never sells the company, that at some point he's going to die, and someone's going to have to continue on the legacy of writing more background material, more empires and so forth. The key as like an author, which is that the feeling, maybe not as much as the style, because I don't think anyone could really match the style. But you have to be consistent when it comes to the way things are laid out, the way things are presented, and the consistency with also the background material, which actually, in the case of the Starfleet Universe, SFB, and the associated products to SFB, are consistent with each other, consistent with the current background material. Yes, you can tweak things a little here, a little there, but you can't all of a sudden let's say the Federation all of a sudden had this major technological difference, you know, whether it's a new weapon or a new system or whatever that they never had before, you know, and then I said, oh, you know, it's always existed and so forth. You know, it's like some of the issues that I know there's Star Trek fans that have this issue. And that, yeah. And the Star Trek people have this issue, which is, of course, the inconsistency that sometimes occurs because who's ever writing for Star Trek for that book says, oh, I need to have this little thing here, a little thing there, but it's not consistent with the technobabble of Star Trek. You know, how the universe supposedly works. You know. Now, just to get all on tangent there for a moment, that is that, in my mind, I think when it comes to technology and the way Faster life works and so forth, I feel like, and now, you know, science might prove me wrong at some point in time, and Lord knows that might happen a couple of centuries down the road, and I don't think anyone will remember me at that moment in time, which is I always feel like Star Wars has a more realistic approach when it comes to faster than light travel. That is the whole idea of hyperspace. You know, which allows you to fly faster than the speed of light. Yes, you still have to travel in that, and it takes a while. You know, it might take you a day or 2 days to travel, you know, many parsecs or whatever. I'm not sure I get the distances right, but you know. It takes time, you know. Yeah, it takes time in the Star Trek universe, but the idea of warp bubbles and the idea of transporters just doesn't, you know, to me, this doesn't seem realistic, because especially when it comes to transporters, because in my mind, the whole idea of breaking down something that's organic and then recreating it as an exact duplicate, because that's what you're creating. You're destroying something and recreating it. That's what you're doing. I feel like that's impossible to do at such at a subatomic level that would be required. So,
Well, yeah, at our tech level, it pretty much is. But one of the things about the whole Star Trek universe is that they solved all these problems. That's part of their technobabble. I mean, they have replicators. I want my replicator because, you know, it's, you know, food. You know, it's, but it can make anything. They literally solved the problem of energy into matter, matter back to energy.
Right. Which is interesting because actually I was listening to a show on Curiosity, and it's been on, I forget what else, what other channel. I've heard the show called Connections.
Yeah. Steve Attenborough. That's very good. But I was thinking of when you say Connections, I think of that BBC series back in the 70s, 80s time frame.
Yeah.
Where the guy talks about all the how different things in technology evolve into different other things in technology. Like how,
right. It starts with something simple, like the Connections was toothpicks. The original toothpick created for Napoleon, all the way to quantum computers, when it gets to quantum computers and the whole idea of quantum computers actually being able to predict the future, I go, no. But if you think, I don't think so. You know, basically, the supposition in that case, in that program, was that everything would be known about everyone, and therefore you could predict the behaviors of those people. And then I say, no, I disagree with that you actually can completely predict the behaviors to that degree, where you're basically a written book, because the problem is not just you. There's also interactions with others. A whole other thing. But anyway, okay. But the one thing that came up in Connections was that, you know, the whole idea that at some point we're going to be able to actually convert energy into, or you know, basically energy, because in or at least matter in. Transform some kind of matter into another form of matter, which in my mind means at some point energy is involved. But they're saying, it's going to be free, it's going to change the world, and so forth. And I go, no, I don't believe that we can actually control it at the subatomic level, because now that's what you're talking about. Yes, we can do it at the atomic level at the moment. We can form things at the atomic level, atom by atom. We can do that. But
gentlemen, what are you doing?
Excuse me?
Hi.
Hello. Frankie?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, Paul.
Yes.
I'm in the wrong channel. Apologies. I was supposed to go to channel number 2. All right, I'm out of here.
Okay, see ya.
Paul, I sent you a whole bunch of stuff to upload. Did you get a chance to do it?
Nope, I should be able to get done this week.
Perfect.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay.
See you later.
Okay, see you, friend. Bye. Okay. This is what happens when you use Discord and actually theory. There's other ways of using Discord that I could do better. But anyway, and the whole idea was that because you can control things at the atomic level, you can actually develop it so that you can control the atoms, to put them together to create whatever you want. You can create water, you can create whatever. So listen, everything would be free. You could be able to create whatever you wanted. And I'm going, nope. Because Yes, you can arrange atoms, but the question is, okay, you can create have an hydrogen atom, you can have an oxygen atom, and in theory, at the moment, we can control where they go. But how do you position them so they create the proper molecules? You know? Yeah, it gets difficult because now you're talking about the forces between the atoms themselves. So that's the only reason I bring up connection. Now, this is a restart of the original connections, is what it is. So, boy, I'm surprised people keep going in and out of. Don't know. But anyway, having problems, Gary?
Yeah, the line keeps dropping every like 10 minutes or so.
That's weird. I keep on seeing you disappear. That's why I asked. But anyway,
I don't know what's anyway. But yeah, I just wanted to mention I'm not entirely keen on like speculating too much about the far the future of ADB.
Oh yeah.
But what I would say though is that by point of comparison, I would go back to a topic we've spoken about it previously on the BB on the recording, and that is BattleTech, because as you know, it's an ongoing universe. It is also a universe that's changed hands a number of times in terms of both its the actual company that is responsible for running it, and also who owns the IP, which they're not the same thing anymore, and also the creative team that's involved, because even with the current IP holders, Pops own the IP for the tabletop battle game and for the role-playing game, but Microsoft own the rights to the video games. That's why MechWarrior 5, the Clans one that's coming out, is like PC and Xbox. I think it's Xbox as well. Anyway, but even with Catalyst Game Labs, they've gone through at least one period of turnover in terms of who the mainline developer is.
Right.
So, for example, the team that was in place basically to try to catch up to the Dark Age clicky game was one thing. But then a largely new like development team, like a new line developer, a new assistant line developer took over in the run-up to the current Ill Clan era in terms of like... and that involved like a major pivot in terms of where the main storyline was going to go into the new time period that the game is in now. But also, because of the underlying history of the BattleTech universe, it's been filled in significantly. Like there's new era products that go back to the first Star League or to the clan, the formation of the clans, like in the Deep Periphery and so on. But the underlying history and also the range of battlenecks and tanks and aerospace units and so forth that are available in certain time periods, like the Succession Wars or the early clan invasion and so forth, remain consistent. So it's basically probably the most similar to the Star Trek universe in the sense that just as there's a set structure for how the history of the Alpha Octant is told and also how the technologies used by, like, as you were saying, the Federation and also like the Klingons and so forth, has been mapped out at least up until Operation Unity, because we'll wait to see what Modulus 2 has in store for us. Similarly, the current caretakers of BattleTech, they're mindful to keep to the structure that has been set. Also, like, if they go back further or like, you know, look at a side thing and so forth, whatever, but try to basically, narratively speaking, kind of move things forward and so on. So,
right.
I think, and actually, now of course, there are still, you know, people who are committed to their specific era of BattleTech, and I mean, that's basically part of what the responsibility of Catalyst is that they know that not everyone's going to want to jump into the old clan era, but they're welcome to if they want to. But if people want to just play Succession Wars or they want to just play Clan Invasion, a lot of the material that they're creating is basically enabling that. And so it's similar to how, for example, like whoever, whatever the future of ADB is going to be, there'll always be a group who are dedicated to like the middle years and general war period and to the Alpha Octave and so forth. And presumably that will, like, you know, whoever's got some sort of responsibility for the future of the SFU will have that in mind. But hopefully that won't foreclose the possibility of moving into further into Omega, or further into the X2 era, or further into other things, just as catalysts, not even just like staying in the inner sphere. They've also, like, for example, a few years back, when the Clicky game moved into the Dark Age and skipped about 80 years into the future in universe, they basically never really covered what happened in the clan homeworlds and why there's been no contact with them. And about 10 years ago, Catalyst basically created an award-winning book called Wars of Breathing. And they basically, it was like the first major plot point in the setting that was theirs and not a hangover from a leftover from a previous thing. And it was very successful. Mm-hmm. And it actually led to a few developments that are even still happening in the periphery. Like the homeworlds themselves are still off the table because they haven't figured out what they're going to do with them. But one of the clans that escaped the homeworlds, the Goliath Scorpions, they've become almost like a separate a clan apart, both from the ones in the inner sphere and also from the homeworld. So they've got a very interesting further development in their corner of the periphery. So there was actually a product that came out that involved like a major conflict that they were involved in, and so now the Scorpions have become a significant factor beyond the inner sphere. So they basically become almost like a quasi alternate setting that people can get involved in if they so wish, and if they don't, they don't. So and actually, I think as I was looking at, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but the YouTube channel for Catalyst Game Labs, they posted a video, like a preview for the new BattleTech Universe book, and it's huge. And it actually, if you pause it at the right section, you can actually zoom in and you can read the table of contents for all the different factions and eras that are going to be in the Universe source book. And it's going to include things like the Wars of Reaving, which is what happened in the homeworld. And it's going to include the Scorpions, and it's going to include the clans and the inner sphere powers and so forth. So it's anyone who's basically coming into BattleTech, or maybe they haven't been in the game for 30 years, or maybe they've never been in it at all, or maybe they're going to buy the new MechWarrior game on PC and be like, this universe is cool, I want more. So then this universe book is going to say, all right, here you go. If you want to stay in the inner sphere, you can stay. If you don't, here's like a way forward. So yeah, basically, I think that's, you know, of course, now they've got a lot more money because the Kickstarters that the Catalysts have run have been very successful, and they've basically helped bankroll a lot of the new Ill-Clan era products and so on. But even so, I think that they're relatively informative in terms of an IP that's longstanding and that also has to maintain a certain amount of stability and consistency.
Right.
But at the same time, does have windows forward for innovation. So I think that's probably a better comparison to make a pure novel book or something like Dune or Old Man's War, or the on-screen franchise, which runs under its own rules.
Right. I agree, a game-to-game comparison is definitely a better thing. The key question, of course, always is going to be the intent of the person who owns the IP, and what's going to be put out. Because if you really think about it, back in the day of Task Force Games, Task Force Games was pressuring ADB to put out product which was not that good, to be honest. You know, just to get product out the door and get games sold. You know. But, and that's one of the things that would have to be kept in mind. Now, the one thing I have a question for you, Gary, which is when it comes to BattleTech. Now, and since I'm not that familiar with BattleTech when it comes to the different eras, because of I'm going back in the day, you know, with the original BattleTech, when you had BattleTech, CityTech, AeroTech, you know, all of that. those different games back. I said back in the day. This is back in the. I'm thinking. I think they first came out like in the 80s, is what I'm thinking of. But anyhow, and that is, has the technology changed that much? Has bringing up these other eras brought in new weapons, new systems, and so forth into BattleTech, or is it more on the comes to the narrative of that the BattleTech universe?
Okay, so before I try to answer the question, I'll give you an ADB example. So when Starfleet Battles first started, there were no X-ships, no first generation or second generation. And there was no early years material. I mean, yes, there were sublight Romulan ships, but they didn't have lasers because the concept of warp characterization hasn't been invented yet. And there was no W era or Y era. But now that we look back, I mean, from the perspective of someone coming into the Starfleet universe in 2023, which I'm hoping they're doing, this sort of stuff is obvious. Like it's lore, it exists, and also each time period, whether it's in Starfleet Battles or in Federation Commander, which of course never didn't exist back then either, or Call to Arms even, or Star Matter, the stepping stones have been set in place, and there's a great distinction in terms of like if you're flying a ship from the warp refitted era, relative to a mid-year ship, relative to a refitted general warship relative to an X-ship. And there's like a similar progression that you see in the Magellan Cloud, but to a lesser extent in Omega. So in BattleTech, things have both gone forward and they've gone backwards because what they've done is that in about 12 years ago, I should say, they did a Year of the Star League. And what they did is that they went centuries before even the foundation of the Star League. So there's a source book that covers the Reunification War. That's basically when the Star League itself first founded, they beat up on the periphery states to try to force them in. And they even went further than that. They went to the Age of War that existed between the within the Inner Sphere before the Star League was founded. And as part of that, they created primitive battle mechs, primitive battle technology. In fact, there's even a record sheet or an Alpha Strike ship, sorry, Alpha Strike unit card for the Maquis, the very first battle, and it's primitive, like the rules, like for its like the armor is weaker, and its weapons aren't as powerful, and so forth, and the build rules are different. So then they basically show the moving the technology forward to basic intro tech, I guess you could call it, and then to the heights of what the Star League had. And in the Inner Sphere, most of that technology went down again to the level that was introduced to players who started in the late 80s with 3025. And then, of course, the other branch went off in the deeper in the clan homeworld to the evolving into clan tech that you burst into the Inner Sphere with the clan invasion and into the MechWarrior video games and so on. But yes, further from that, the later time periods like Dark Age, they've introduced new forms of armor and new forms of more refinements, weapons, and so forth, new forms of communication. But also, because BattleTech, like the same way, like, in the Starfleet universe, you've got Fed and Empire as well as Starfleet Battles. So the scale of the universe is different. So in BattleTech, the Star League era had thousands of warships and it had massive numbers of regiments. So it's the kind of thing where it's overwhelming to play in classic BattleTech because, but it's great if you're playing strategic level campaign. Like there's a book called Interstellar Operations Battle Force, which includes a thing, Inner Sphere at War, which is basically BattleTech's closest equivalent to Fed Empire. So if you want to be the lord of a successor state or be a khan of a clan, then you can do that. So over time, the plan at least is to introduce support for Inner Sphere at War for those different time periods. So you could either basically, or you could even scale down a little bit. Like say, for example, if you like space combat, then the Star League era gives you lots of warships to play around with. But then, of course, if you fast forward to different time periods, the warships are all gone. So you don't really have that aspect of the game anymore. The focus is more on smaller company or regimental scale battles and so on. So both in terms of the wax and wane, of the technology that's in the mechs that are fighting, and also in terms of the scope, in terms of whether a time period is better to use in Alpha Strike or in Classic Battletech or in like a strategic level game or something like that.
Right.
There are all those things that have been developed and so on. So,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah. Well, basically, to boil it down, yes, basically there are different technologies that are introduced from the different eras, in some cases brought backwards, just like in SFB where we had, okay, what happened before, the general war, when it comes to early years, before the actually Federation actually existed and fully, what it was. Hold it. Kitty, love you.
And the Man-Kazin Wars continue.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah, well, I know what he wants. He wants the T word. That's, T-R-E-A-T-S. That's what he wants. And it's like, nope, it's not time. Actually, it is kind of time. Normally, around the time that he gets those. But not on podcast tonight. They get them late. So he has to deal. But anywho, yeah, that's basically the point. And which means that in both, obviously, since it was done by ADB, and more importantly, Steve Cole, under the direction of Steve Cole, that the rules and the actual weapon systems were consistent when it comes to being within the Starfleet universe. So,
and balanced. Consistent,
right.
Tuned, and balanced.
Well, balanced to a certain degree, because all I got to say is one word, Omega. And
well, how much has he worked on Omega versus how much has he worked on Alpha?
I understood. I know it originally was created by Bruce Grahl, and Lord knows it definitely could use some work. They did. They said they did some work. Yeah, they did some work to clean up the rules and so forth. But when it comes to the balance within the Omega Octant, and the different possible conflicts that happen, because Lord knows. If you look at the Omega map, you'll see that the conflicts range all over, and it rarely. It's not that I'm not saying that they all would have faced each other, at some point in time, but they faced a lot of each other, so it wasn't just. It's not as limited as in with the Alpha Octant, yes.
In fairness, even the Alpha Octant, the Eastern and the Western sides don't play each other, especially in Fed Commander.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I was saying.
Plasma Empires are...
I was just saying that Omegas, they face a larger variety of empires than in the Alpha Octant. Usually, the Zinnies don't usually face the Romulans,
except during Operation Remus. But I think what I was trying to get at is where was I going at? Yeah. So I think that Omega and also maybe the LMC as well. It's actually kind of like interesting to think how would the development of those places been. Had both a call to arms and Federation Commander existed at that time. So actually, technically, I think Klingon Border came out just around the time that Module C5 came out. But because if you think about it like this, in regular Starfleet battles, you can play squadron battles and you can play fleet battles. But really, the core, the game is really mostly suited towards duels between cruisers. It gets muddier the more, the bigger like force that you use. In Federation Commander, the main focus is on squadrons. You pick a certain point value and then, assemble your ship cards for that point. And the hope is that basically the squadrons will be balanced against each other, even if the individual ships, one is more or less powerful than the other. And something similar with a Call to Arms Starfleet, where you're probably taking a larger force than that even, And the idea is that the overall amount, like point level that you pick, the forces that you'll have on either side will do what they're supposed to do. Like, for example, even the alpha octant, you think about how the different changes to the SFB rules have affected the ISC in terms of using the echelon. And even in FC, the echelon is still not great because, I mean, there's nothing stopping a seeker stack. Also, even the super stack rules, like, they're not that limited. But in a call to arms, you can't put the miniatures on top of each other. Like, you have to spread them out. So an ISC task force can actually try to do the echelon. Well, I mean, in the future when the ISC are out of the game, because they're not in the game yet. But so that would be an interesting thing to explore, I guess, when the future books for Call to Arms get there. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is that had Bruce Graw been creating Omega in a Starfleet universe where a game like Federation Commander existed, that might have basically put more of an onus on the idea that you're not basically putting a Vary heavy cruiser versus a Troban heavy cruiser and expecting them to be a fair fight. The idea is that you're taking a Vary squadron and you're hoping that basically the amount of points that you're paying, BPV that you're paying for those frigates or destroyers or whatever, balances out relative to the price that the Troban player is playing for like their one or two ships by comparison.
Oh.
And then, you know, in terms of actual playtesting and so forth, it would be the games themselves would fit that concept more neatly than in Starfleet Battles, where, you know, playtesting things bigger than jewels can be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. But, you know, but the thing is, it was felt that the playtesting wasn't done properly when it comes to Omega, Octant, game, you know, Empires and so forth, that they weren't really... It wasn't played enough to actually have tactics and stratagems more like involved, you know, the development of those, because of you can't definitely when it comes to Omega and just like the LMC, both of those require different ways of thinking when it comes to combat. So, but anyhow, the key there. The key question, obviously, when it comes to A to B and anyone going forward, is the consistency. Because A to B, you know, when you have Steve Cole, who is the designer and has certain really strong opinions about how he wants to see the game go forward, there's going to be a point
that's a polite understatement.
Yeah. But going forward, either he definitely has to record that posterity so that, you know, whoever takes over at some point before knows at least his ideas. And they might have their own ideas and go, you know, yeah, there's some good ideas, but we really should tweak them here. We can do some really exciting stuff if we do go this direction and so forth. But the also, the key question that in my mind would be the consistency. You know, do the rules and the way the system work feel consistent with the way the rest of the product operates? You know, which is not always
an
easy thing.
Even now, like there are staffs for different game systems. Like for example, a lot of the work that gets done on Federation Empire modules, a lot of it is directed by Steve O'Cole, and also, of course, he has a major input. But a lot of the team, led by Colonel Chuck Strong, they basically do a lot of the grunt work in terms of actually assembling the material that's needed, like whether it's for a new module or for new scenarios or for new SIT tables, so for revising the tables that are already there. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're always on the same page as Steve Cole, or that things always work out entirely one-to-one with SFP. I mean, everyone's doing their best, but, you know, things slip through the cracks. But there's a body of work and also a body of people created for that work that should hopefully remain in place, you know, in the near to mid future, in terms of being able to make sure that there's not basically starting over from scratch if things happen. So, I mean, there's people that are, there's similar staffs that exist for the other game systems and so on. So, but ultimately it'll be down to, like whoever it is to make sure that they leverage it properly. And so, I mean, to give another example, I mean, like when FASA closed its doors, a lot of people basically assumed at the time that both Battletech and Shadowrun were dead and they just drifted away from the universe. And a lot of people that stayed were maybe put off by the WizKids Dark Age clicky game. Like, they didn't necessarily like the changes in the setting, but they didn't like the clicky nature of the thing. Mm-hmm. So in all that, though, the organization that maintained the, you know, basically that became the new developer for classic Battletech, they basically had a twin challenge in terms of reminding people that they do exist and that they didn't actually, there wasn't necessarily that long an interregnum between the, I think it was called FanPro. They're like a, they're the forerunners, the Catalyst Game Labs, in terms of them taking up the reins of classic Battletech and the original FASA closing its doors. So there is a certain continuity there.
Right.
They have basically had to deal with the twin challenges of basically convincing people that who might have left when FASA disappeared, that yes, the universe is still going and it's still a thriving thing, and B, convincing people who weren't necessarily happy with Dark Age that A, they could basically show Dark Age. By the time Dark Age was allowed to be shown in classic form, they could show much more thoroughly how it works as a setting and where they're able to take it going forward. And so I do think that, I mean, hopefully there isn't quite as traumatic a transition here. But again, as I said earlier, I'm really not comfortable speculating on that side of things because it's... But I would say that I'd like to think that plans are in place and plans within plans, so that in the best of times, the best of times, that there will be a healthy future for the universe, for this universe going forward.
Right.
Well, Gary, what I can say is the topic did come up at StratCon. It was talked about through the participants, and somebody brought it up to Steve Cole, and he didn't give us a lot of words, but he did say that there is a secession plan in place.
Oh yeah. Oh, I know there is. I've heard that myself, that there is a secession plan in place in the case of the death of Steve Cole.
And it's like it's gone back to the same thing that they used to talk about in other kinds of volunteer organizations. Now, this is not one, but in back when I was active in the SCA, everybody had to have a deputy. Every group officer had to have a deputy, and every group officer had to have a drop dead box. That way, if you got clipped by a drunk driver and died, your deputy could ask for the drop dead box, and nothing would be lost. So that's just good business practice.
Right. Oh, agreed. Agreed. Like the whole idea of CEO succession, you know, when Steve Jobs, you know, was not long for this world, you know, that he had all set up for Tim Cook. And of course, at some point, Tim Cook is going to have to reveal, I'm sure he's got someone in mind at the moment. I'm not sure if he's talked to the board about it yet. But, you know, things like that, you know, and I'm sure he's thought of his successor that currently is within the company and so forth, you know, because that's part of having a smart business. When it comes to, well, as I said, the point I want to get across is that the key thing with any succession is going to be consistency and have it so that people aren't fearful that all of a sudden, okay, Steve Cole died and SAP is going to go away. But I definitely agree with Big Slow Target, Dave, that the thing is that any sale of ADB is definitely, you have to increase in revenue. Obviously, there's going to have to be some investment to increase the revenue, because I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts that the current revenue stream for ADB is not large, but it's good enough at the moment to maintain all, you know, the salaries of the people who work, you know, pay the people who work there, which is a small group of individuals. You know, we've got you know, Leanna and Steve Cole, we've got Steve Patrick, and we got Mike. We've got, of course, Jean Sexton and her husband, and Al, and I forget the graphic designer. And even the graphic designer is not, my understanding is not full time. So, you know, I'm not sure the arrangement currently. Simon, thank you. My guess is that Simon is not full time because of, I don't think he needs a full time graphic designer. But, you know, it supports a small company. And, you know, and if you have another company come in that wants to grow it, obviously it means, that means one, they have to grow the user base, and more importantly, they've got to invest and spending money and hope to get it back in the future. And I think part of that is going to be do people feel like any new product that's put out there is consistent? Now, I think everyone will agree at this moment in time that the biggest issue is going to be alpha octant people. Those people who, you know, they want to play their general war bubble, and you're not going to sell them new product. Because I think, as I said, the real point I was trying to get across is not just that, but also that I think we have enough ships in the alpha octant when it comes to that part of the category. And the tough part is going to get people that interested in the Starfleet universe that might not necessarily be Star Trek, you know, and that is hard. You can possibly do it, but going into the future, and the tough part, and Steve Cole, I'm pretty sure he's mentioned this to me. I'm sure he's mentioned it to others, which is the big issue is that as you advance SFB into the future, meaning future-wise of the timeline of SFB, is making sure that these more modern ships don't run afoul of Paramount's IP. Because otherwise,
staying clear of Imperial entanglements would be a serious, serious challenge.
Yep, exactly, and that.
It's why there is no quote unquote hardware upgrade for photon torpedoes in the X-Tech charts, because one of the things that Paramount has specifically mentioned to Steve is that the SFU Federation can't have anything approaching a new torpedo type, aka quantum torpedoes.
Right.
Oh. Not to be confused with quantum wave torpedoes.
Right.
That's because the quantum torpedoes were from the cinematic canon.
Right. Oh, agreed. Now, I don't think we'll ever get away from photon torpedoes for Federation. Now, how they operate might change, and I think the whole idea when it comes to second-generation X-ships and what they originally done, that's something that might be done in the future, maybe not second generation, maybe third. But, you know, that I can see it going that far, but the tough part, and I think there's so many people that'd be interested in what the second generation X ships would actually be, and of course with the Zorkalians, and yes, I love you. What does it say? Say,
because N words are brutal tonight.
Yep. He wants a lot of attention and say hi, Zooks. Goodbye, people. Now, get you from entangled of my. Oh, there it goes.
And hey, that's all we're going to hear from he who interrupts the podcast.
No, Zooks. No, not now. Yeah. I think that is my clue to go beat him and say goodnight to you guys.
And tonight, tonight the Zinti wins.
tonight the Zinti wins. Yeah, I think that is truly the case for this evening. Zinti forever. I agree. Okay, well.
Well, actually, Paul, really, yes. Paul, I do want to ask him, did you get a chance to talk to Doug and show him a copy of Module C6?
No. When I went over last time, it was purely for helping him move, and Lord knows, it was nuts. It was absolutely nuts. I've not had a chance to go back to visit Doug.
You can come back.
I know I can come back. I don't think I'll have this weekend. Or probably next time I'll be able to come and visit will probably be in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Because I don't think it'd be a good idea to come during Thanksgiving, the other weekend.
No, you can come during Thanksgiving.
No. Not you. I'm talking about me. It might be fine for you. It might not be so fine for the rest of my family because we might have other plans.
I'm sorry. This is just too much.
No, you're quite welcome. Come on up anytime you want, Paul.
Understood. I got your new address, so I know where you live. So, which actually, that's one thing I have to remember. I have to update the address for my godson. So he gets the books. So.
Although technically, Paul, the issue is not about whether you can go; it's whether you can get back.
Oh, well, come back is more like more to the story than they get back.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's been fun.
But yeah, I'd like to spend get a chance 2 weeks from now. Make sure to have your copy packed.
Actually,
I'd like to hear Doug, if you're still there, I definitely would like to hear your thoughts about. Well, I mean, if you want to go to Warehouse 23 and check out the PDF, that'd be great too. Mm-hmm. But failing that, if Paul wants to drag his paperback copy over to see in a few weeks' time, because I definitely like to hear your thoughts about the Lost Empire Parabians and Carnivons. Just based on the stuff that we talked about before. But if anything that springs to mind after you've had a look at it.
Yeah, actually, I did do, that's one thing I did do today, which is I actually did look and get together my copy of Module C6. I had to dig through my box of SAB stuff, and I got it, and now I have it all together. So my next time I go over Doug's, I can actually grab the Module C6, the physical hard copy, and take it with me when I go visit Doug. So I'm all set there.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, Gary, it was wonderful to have you around. Have a good night.
Have a night.
And Jeff, it's always fun to having you around. You drive safe.
I'll do that.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Night.
Good night to you too, Doug.
Hey, give me a minute when you're done, then.
Will do. So, had a nice little discussion, which actually was not the original topic for tonight, if you can believe it or not, to talk about A to B and succession and all of that kind of thing, which I think it was quite an interesting discussion on that topic. Because it's always, you know, we know it is, but the question is, of course, always what happens afterwards, i.e., not that there isn't one, but we know there's a succession plan in place. But the question is, when someone takes over, what will happen? And we don't know, but I don't. The big thing, I think, as I pointed out, that it's, I think it's important, is just consistency. That still feels like the SFB of old when it comes to at least the rules. Now, obviously, there might be some other ideas about, okay, have something more along like the clicks thing, which is even taking like Fed Common and boiling it down some more so it makes it a little bit even more interactive, maybe more accessible. No, Dave, I'm not going to let you. I'm not. Nope. Okay. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.